You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody, I'm Justin McGuire, and this is Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. Okay, here's your news. The Orioles lost Tuesday night 10-6 to the Houston Astros and have now lost four games in a row. They're 1-4 on the season. And here's your analysis. Unlike the previous four games, the Orioles actually scored a few runs in this game. They actually doubled their season output by scoring six. Mike Wright wasn't a total disaster as a starting pitcher. He did go five innings, allowing three runs. Nothing to write home about, not a great outing, but considering how bad the Orioles' starting pitchers had been up to that point, not the worst thing ever. That's the good news. The offense got going, Mike Wright wasn't a disaster. The bad news is, of course, the Orioles still lost by four runs, and that's because the bullpen completely imploded on them. You can blame Buck Showalter for bringing in two very inexperienced pitchers. You can blame the Orioles for having two inexperienced Rule 5 pitchers on the roster in the first place. But whoever you blame, the Orioles are now 1-4, and they continue to face a tough schedule for the rest of April. All right, well, we're joined today by Luke Jones. He's the Orioles beat reporter for WNST Radio. He and I talked about the troubles the Orioles have had so far in 2018 and what it might mean for this season and beyond. Just to note, we recorded this interview before Tuesday's game, so at the beginning we focus a lot on the Orioles' offensive woes. We get into a lot of other topics, though, so it's well worth listening to. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Luke Jones. He's the Orioles beat reporter for WNST in Baltimore. And welcome, Luke.
How are you, Justin?
I'm doing well. I'm doing a lot better than the Orioles bats, that's for sure. And that's the thing I wanted to ask you about. Through four games, and we're recording this before Tuesday night's game against the Astros, so it's through four games, the Orioles have hitting has been, let's just say, atrocious. There's no other way of putting it. They've so far scored a total of six runs in four games. None of those runs have come against the starting pitchers. So they've yet to score a run this season against a starting pitcher in like 28 innings or something like that. And then going back even to last season, it's been 40-some innings since they've scored against any starting pitcher. They rank dead last in MLB in basically every offensive category you could think of, on base percentage, hits, runs, advanced stats, weighted on base average, all that kind of stuff, hard hit balls. They're basically the worst hitting team in baseball at this point. And I don't think there's any way of getting around that. You know, they have faced some pretty good pitchers so far, but it's not like they've really faced the elite of the elite yet. I mean, Justin Verlander and Dallas Keuchel will come up in the next two games. They haven't faced anybody quite that good yet, I don't think. So are you surprised that, I mean, and we were all expecting the Orioles to struggle with pitching. Were we expecting them to struggle this much with the bats?
I mean, you have to be surprised when it's this bad. I mean, certainly anyone who's watched the Orioles over the last 5 to 6 years, when they've had so much prosperity, they've been to the playoffs three different times over the previous 6 years, we've seen them go through stretches where they don't swing the bats. But for it to be at the beginning of the season and for it to be this pronounced. I mean, I made the joke on Twitter on Monday night as Charlie Morton was completely shutting them down. At what point does Dan Duquette start trading international bonus slots for some runs? I mean, they trade them for middling prospects, basically. But it really has been incredible. And, I mean, you look at those numbers, they look like, save for the couple home runs they've hit at the end of games when they've been, you know, the outcome's been all but decided. They've hit like a National League pitcher collectively across the board. So I am surprised to see that. They're not going to hit like this all season long. And, you know, one thing that I've been reminding people around town, you have to let a season breathe. Yes, it's very concerning. Yes, you don't want to be in a position where you start off 4-16 and the season's basically over before the month of April concludes. But you look at the schedule that they have early on. Yes, they have faced some good pitching, but I'm in agreement with you. You can't make good pitching look like it's a Cy Young winner every night. It is surprising, but at the same time, as we were looking at this club throughout the offseason, even before they got Andrew Cashner and Alex Cobb, everyone looked at that and said, okay, if this team's going to get back to being at least a serious wild card contender, then clearly Chris Davis has to bounce back, and Mark Trumbo has to bounce back, and Manny Machado needs to hit more like he did in 2015 and 16 than he did last year, at least in terms of results. I know he hit into a lot of tough luck. And you were counting on four or five guys bouncing back. Well, to this point, no one's hitting. When Machado's your only guy through the first four games who's even above the Mendoza line, talking about the regulars, it's almost tough to even talk about it in serious terms. That's how poor this offense has been over these first few games.
Yeah, it's just astonishing because, like you said, it's not even just, you know, you mentioned Machado and his results last year and some bad luck at play there. Like I said, the stats I saw today, they're basically last in the majors in terms of hard hit balls. So they're earning this distinction of being the worst hitting team. They're not hitting into bad luck, with maybe a couple exceptions. There was a hit last night that was the Astros had perfectly played. I think it was Caleb Joseph with some men on base. There's been a couple of things like that, but for the most part, they're striking out or they're hitting weak grounders or weak fly balls. They're not doing much of anything, and I'm always fascinated by seeing a team go into a collective slump. It's just a weird thing to me. You spend some time in the clubhouse around these guys. What do you think they're talking about? What's Buck saying? Are they even talking about this? Are they acknowledging it? Or is it something the veterans on this team just figure it's going to work itself out? How do they address a slump like this?
I think it's the latter. I mean, it has to be. I mean, again, as poor as they have looked, I think you do have to keep it in perspective and say, look, at some point during the season, even the Astros are going to have a stretch. I think, maybe. I don't know. That lineup's pretty darn good. But at some point, they're going to have a 4 or 5 day stretch where they just don't score any runs. So I think you have to take that approach. But it's funny. I was even asking a couple other reporters on the beat about this as the Minnesota series was concluding. How do you respond to early season struggles? I mean, it's really easy to say, it's early. It's a small sample size. There are well over 150-some games left. But at the same time, you haven't had that success just yet. You don't have that period of time where you swung the bats really well for a week or two. So you don't exactly have that that recentism where, we're scuffling now, but a couple weeks ago we were hitting a cover off the ball. So I think it's interesting. I think probably more of a challenge for younger players. And I even know, I think Jim Palmer said on Masson's telecast in the opener of the Houston series, he even had to tell Trey Mancini, hey, put your head up. I mean, you're fine. You were a third place in Rookie of the Year voting last year. So I think it's a little more of a challenge for younger teams. But with the Orioles having the veterans that they do, I can't imagine that they're having team meetings yet or anything crazy like that. I think you just have to take it in stride. You lean on success you've had in the past, even if you haven't had it so far in 2018. And I don't think now's the time to start making drastic changes or to be completely flipping over the batting order or whatever. I mean, we might be at that point a week or two from now, but I think you just have to take it in stride and realize the ebbs and flows of a 162-game season.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a lot easier to have that perspective if this happens in, just a random 5-game stretch in June or August. But when you start the season like this and it just gets everything off to a bad start, then, combine it with the fact that the starting pitching outside of Dylan Bundy has been a disaster so far. It just makes for a bad feeling overall for the team, I think. Now, again, I'm going to ask you just to play a hitting coach for a minute here. One thing that I've noticed, and I certainly don't consider myself an expert on the technical aspects of hitting, but it seems like they're really being confused by a lot of breaking balls so far this year. That seems to be a big issue. Does it seem to you that seems to be one of the issues? They're just not really hitting the breaking stuff, or is it simpler than that?
I think that's been a pretty common theme for them the last couple years when they run into teams like the Astros, who some of these teams that have really become much more breaking and off-speed heavy rather than the fastball. I mean, this lineup can punish fastballs, and not that they have done it so far this season, but we've seen in the past. When they've had their issues, you're getting those guys, much like what we saw with Morton and McCullers and what the Astros did in the postseason last year, just throwing curveball after curveball. Just incredible to see. The Orioles are that team that really struggles with that. I mean, really, you go through this lineup 1 through 9, there's only one guy that really stands out to me that hits the breaking ball well, and that's Jonathan Scope. Going back over the last year or two, really, you look at the rest of these other guys. I mean, even Machado, for as tremendous as he is, I think he's fine hitting breaking stuff, but I don't consider that to be like a strength of his per se. Really, with this club, they like hitting heat. They like a power club. They like fastballs. They like to turn over that, turn back that 95 mile per hour fastball into the seat. So I think teams that have scouted them really well have done that more so. I don't know if that's, I don't think that can forgive them hitting as poorly as they have to this point, but I do think that's something that they've had an issue with. And those teams, those pitchers that we're seeing it across baseball now, as much as we see the crazy velo from bullpen arms, you see a lot of these starting pitchers now, they rely a little less on their fastball than 5-10 years ago even, and they're really throwing a lot of breaking stuff, and the Orioles have been a team that collectively have had a lot of problems with that over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's interesting you note that, because the limited success they have had with the bat has come against bullpens entirely, right? So maybe that's an indication that they are hitting some of that hard heat coming in the late innings from these guys instead of the starters. All right. So we agree. I think that it's way too early for this team to panic. I mean, it's only it's 4 or 5 games into the season at this point. It's still April. We've still got 152 or 157 or whatever it is games by the time people are listening to this. So it is too early to panic. When does it not become too early to panic? When do they get to a point where, now, again, it's hard to see them continuing to hit like this, because no major league team can go an entire season hitting like this. But say in another couple weeks, they're still struggling a lot. They're still not scoring very many runs. When do they start saying, we got to do something to change this, or the season's going to slip away from us?
Well, I think a lot of this is going to be dependent on their schedule early on. I mean, they play 14 of their first 20 on the road. Most of those coming against playoff teams from a year ago. So they don't exactly have the easiest schedule, and they're playing a lot of these games away from Oriole Park at Camden Yards. So I think a lot of it is record dependent, and that sounds so simplistic, but I look at Toronto last year. I mean, think about the Blue Jays. They were coming off back-to-back ALCS appearances. On paper, still looked like they were going to be a team that was going to compete with Boston. I think most people assumed it would be Boston and Toronto at the top. The Yankees probably still a year away, and then the Orioles kind of being in that land that they always are, where the projection systems don't like them, and they tend to outplay those projections. And we saw what ended up happening. Toronto, if you recall, started 1-9. They didn't swing the bats quite as poorly as the Orioles are right now, but it was close. Batista got off to, so many of their established guys got off to bad starts. And when you're 1-9, I'm not saying you can't overcome that, but think about it. I mean, if you're talking about, reasonably speaking, if you're an 88-win team, that's generally going to have you right on the cusp of being that second wild card, typically over the last 5 or 6 years. But you're 8 games, 9 games, 10 games below 500 in the month of April. I mean, just think how well you have to play just to get to that 87, 88, 89 win mark. I mean, you have basically killed your entire margin for error in the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season. So I would say, to answer your question a little more succinctly, I think you look another week or two. I mean, if this team starts 3-12 and they're continuing to swing the bat like this and they're not pitching, then at that point, you know what this division's going to look like. I never thought the Orioles were going to be a serious contender for the division, but I thought if things go well for them, certainly the second wild card would be reasonable, plausible, let's say. But if you really put yourself behind the eight ball in April, I think it's going to be really, really difficult for this club to make up that ground. The saying goes that you can't win a pennant in April, but I absolutely think you can lose a pennant in April, and I'm not just talking about the 88 Orioles. I think these first 3 weeks of the season, where they're playing so much away from Camden Yards, they got to figure out a way to at least tread water. If you're 8-12, that's not the end of the world, but again, if you're in that territory where you're 5-15 or something crazy like that, man, it's really difficult looking at this team having a path to getting back in contention very easily.
Now, I know we, again, I'm going to put the caveat here again. It's early, but I've already, I'm already seeing some talk on Twitter. I saw somebody, I'm not even going to mention who it was, not somebody I necessarily have whose opinion matters much to me, but somebody I saw on Twitter yesterday said something to the effect of, you know, it's not too early to fire Duquette. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to start hearing about that. We're going to hear about that, about Buck Showalter, if things keep going like this. Do you have any sense? I mean, we know both these guys are in the last year of their contract. Do you have any sense that if this is a disastrous, you know, 88-like, or, you know, start? I mean, obviously it can't be at 1-21, an 0-21 start because they won the first game. But say, like right. you say, they're 5-20 at some point or something like that. Do you have any sense that the ownership group here would think about making changes to either at Duquette or Showalter, or do you think that that's a non-starter? They're going to let them play out the string regardless.
I mean, judging by the history of Peter Angelos's ownership, I'm guessing you'd probably see it play out. I mean, the reality is they're both on expiring contracts anyway. I mean, I've said for a while, I don't anticipate Dan Duquette returning. I don't know that for certain. I don't want to make it sound like I'm reporting that, but my gut tells me, and you've even seen it, if you've read the tea leaves with how this offseason has gone, Brady Anderson's had much more influence with some negotiations, with pursuing some free agents. I think you're seeing him, at the very least, if he's not just going to become the general manager with that official title, you're seeing his influence increase. And I think Buck Showalter of Duquette and Showalter has a much better chance of returning. But if they lose 95 games, how much of that would be maybe you start fresh, or maybe Buck says, hey, I've had a really nice run here. He has said for several years now this will be his last managerial job. I'll still believe that when I see it, because he's still, you know, this isn't an individual who's 75 years old or anything like that. But I would tend to think that things would have to be just an absolute disaster for them to make a change. But even then, I'm not so sure, because I think everyone's kind of been pointing to the end of this season as being a time when they make change. I think for me, the more interesting issue is if they really fall out of this thing very quickly and to a very difficult level where they're, you know, think back to how they played in 2010 over the first 3.5-4 months of that season. Then to me, it's when do you trade Manny Machado? Do you look to trade Adam Jones if he'll wait his 10-5 rights? Once Zach Britton gets back and pitches, you know, for at least a few weeks, do you try to trade him? You know, where does Brad Brock stand? What do they do with Jonathan Scope? I think those are probably the more compelling questions for me, at least right now. But certainly, and I wrote about this throughout the offseason and talked about it throughout the offseason, the idea that you'd go into a year with a lame duck general manager and a lame duck manager in terms of contractually speaking, it's just crazy to me. So to make my answer, you know, long story short, I'm guessing you wouldn't see a drastic change with either of them now, but certainly that could have a major impact on what happens after this season with either of them potentially returning or not.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and I've had this conversation with others on the podcast already, you know, about Machado, for instance. Obviously, they have already, you know, passed on trading him at other deadlines and off seasons and things when they could have. And the question, of course, is going to become how much value does he even have at the deadline? You know, half a season of Machado. I mean, how much is somebody really going to be willing to give up for him, particularly if, you know, he has a first half like he did last year, where he's not, you know, not an elite hitter, you know, for the first half of the season. Is somebody really going to be willing to give up much of anything? You know, same thing with Adam Jones. I mean, Scope, you would think they could get more for him because he's under contract longer. But yeah, and they don't have like the pitchers to trade, presumably, you know, other than maybe Britton, maybe Brock. But they don't have the starting pitchers who everybody's always looking for at the deadline. I wonder, even if they do go into full fire sale mode at the deadline, how much they can even really get for these guys.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And this is, I've been so conflicted on how to view this team, not necessarily even how good or how bad they'll be in 2018, but you know, we've all talked about it. What's the vision here? What's the direction beyond this season? And as nice as it was to see them sign Alex Cobb, and they make a long-term commitment, did they overpay? Yeah, but at the same time, you kind of have to overpay when you're talking about someone pitching at Camden Yards, pitching against the behemoths in the American League East. But at the same time, where I have concerns is if this team kind of just is okay, kind of just hovers around 500, doesn't really look like that team that's really going to threat, but is still mathematically well within reach. It's what happened in 2015. It's what happened last year. Neither of those teams really felt like a team that was going to make a major push. And instead of selling, and you know, it's easy to say hindsight's 2020, but I can remember writing in 2015, I thought they needed to sell. I think if you're talking about it from that, kind of using that lens, maybe the Orioles getting off to a lousy start isn't the worst thing for their long-term future. You know, if they're two games under 500 in mid-July, is ownership willing to part with Manny Machado? And you know, even if you can get great value for those guys, and we know this organization never moves swiftly. Even the good moves that they make, very rarely are they swift and bold in how they act. So it is really kind of nerve-wracking to think, even if they're in a sell-type position, are they far enough out of it where they want to sell with conviction, or are they kind of doing it halfway like they did last year where, okay, yeah, they were shopping Zach Britton and maybe they had a tentative agreement in place with Houston, but let's go buy Tim Beckham in the meantime. You know, they kind of have this halfway territory that they've been in for a while now, and when you're approaching the end, as it is for so many individuals from a contractual standpoint, it really becomes nerve-wracking. But you know, the best-case scenario, I think, is either way, like you mentioned, if Machado's playing at an MVP-type level, either that makes your club that much better and you look like you're one of the favorites for at least that second wild card and you feel like you have a real chance, or if you're still bad enough, you at least drive up enough interest in him, and all you need is just a couple teams to get into that bidding war type of position. You know, maybe someone's third baseman goes down, someone's shortstop goes down with an injury, and if you get two or three teams interested in a transcendent talent like him, you're not going to get a return that's going to turn your entire organization around, but you might be able to accelerate the rebuilding process a little bit. Maybe instead of being 3 years away, maybe you can get a couple guys that can make you 2 years away from being competitive again. So it really is, if you're someone who cares about the long-term well-being of this organization, 2018 has to be you have to feel quite conflicted. You want to see him win. You don't want to be watching terrible baseball like we've seen the first four games overall. But at the same time, you don't want all these guys to just jump ship at the end of the season and you're left with a couple inconsequential draft picks.
Yeah, and you touched on something there that has come up on this podcast time and time again when I've been talking to people, and that's there's just this complete lack of long-term plan that seems to be that the Orioles seem to have. They don't seem to ever, you know, you talk about the Astros, the team they're playing right now, and that looks so good and has the last few years and looks like they're going to for the foreseeable future. You know, not too long ago, they were horrid. They were as bad as a baseball team as you can see. But the way they got here was by having a plan and sticking to it. And that seems to be what the Orioles can't do. They can't just say, okay, we're going into rebuild mode, or okay, we're going to go for it. It's always kind of half measures. And that's seems to be the problem here to me. And that's where I would hope that maybe this time around, when they're clearly going to need to go into some sort of rebuild mode after this season, if not during the season, you know, come up with a long-term plan, stick to it, and don't bog yourself down with seven-year contracts for the Chris Davises of the world, because that's not how you're going to get to where the Astros are. I mean, the Astros I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, it doesn't even need to necessarily always be as extreme as what the Astros did or what the Cubs did. I mean, I go back to 2015. Like I said, it sounds hindsight being 2020 now, but I said, you can even go Google it and find it at WNST.net, me talking about the Orioles needing to be in sell mode instead of going out and getting Gerardo Parra like they did, who ended up being worse than what they had in right field, ironically. But if you think back to 2015, and this is just a very basic example, Who were their guys that were had expiring contracts at that point? Chris Davis, Wei-Yin Chen, Darren O'Day, and Matt Wieters. And if you had traded, let's say, three out of those four, and I think it's reasonable to think they could have traded three out of those four. Wieters was coming off Tommy John surgery, hadn't played more than 6 weeks at that point. Might have been tough for him. But just think, those three players, and I'm not saying you would have completely rebuilt your farm system, but if you had traded those three guys and netted a couple solid pieces, let's just say a starting caliber position player, and maybe you would have found one decent middle-of-the-rotation starting pitcher, think about those two pieces and then all the financial flexibility you would have had. I love Darren O'Day, but the last couple of years hasn't been the same guy. Davis stating the obvious. Chen left. Matt Wieters left a year later. I mean, it's just, if they had done something like that, we might not be talking about this team in the same terms as far as them going off a complete cliff at this point. So it really does speak to just this problem with going year to year. It doesn't have to be a full-blown gut the whole thing, tear it down, rebuild all the time, but at least at some point acknowledge, okay, this isn't working. Let's reboot a little bit, and we can even put ourselves in position to still be a wild card contender the following year. But you said it perfectly. I mean, they just have this kind of halfway. It's as though they wake up and they do what they feel like, what strikes their fancy that morning when they get out of bed. Sometimes, as far as rebuilding or trying to reload or add guys, I mean, it really. I hate being too critical from a standpoint of they have had a lot, some really nice success the last 5 to 6 years, but many of the issues that plagued this team for a long time before these recent years are still there. It's just, they did find some talent that's been able to make a difference, but now you're back in that position where you got to make some decisions here, and you got to be bold, and you need to establish a direction and stick to it. And I'm still not convinced we're going to see that here, even over the next few months.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much in agreement about the direction of this team. Well, Luke, thanks so much for joining us, and would love to have you back on throughout the season to see how this hitting's going. And maybe the next time we talk, they'll be hitting above the Mendoza line as a team, and we can kind of talk about some more pleasant things.
Yeah, like starting pitching and how good that is, right?
Exactly.
I look forward to it, Justin, and I definitely will catch up again soon.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Matt. Appreciate it.
No problem at all.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.